The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You're about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show, Thursday. Friday Eve, as my little buddy Dom would say. He's going to join us in the 4 o'clock hour, as is his custom. He likes to fashion himself a working man these days. You know, he's got a day job and, you know, he goes and does it. And then he joins us here on the greatest radio show ever, some say. I hope today is an excellent show. We got a fine guest who joins us in the 4 o'clock hour. And this has been the worst kept secret in politics. Our friend, Dr. Kristen Lierley, is running for the Mike Gallagher seat in Green Bay. She made her official campaign. She made her campaign announcement. I guess that's what they call it. Did so this morning at a brewery. And it was already in the paper last night. The Journal Sentinel had beat her to the punch. So you want to align the press. You want to get them ready for when you do a campaign launch, but you don't want them to beat you to the punch per se. And if that wasn't bad enough, our own friend Jim Schmidt the other day, when he joined us, I think he also let the cat out of the bag. So shame on you, Jim. Shame on you, Journal Sentinel. Kristen Lierley joins us today at 4:05. You're going to like her. I want you to check back. If you've got to step away, come back for her. You need to hear this candidate. I have not been so optimistic that a blue could turn a red district as I have been about her candidacy. I'm very excited about her. And read the Journal Sentinel article. It dropped last night. I think we mentioned it on the show. So I don't think we're out of school at this point. I do want to talk about this working man theme. The working man. You know, we hear this term. And I know that Democrats would like to appeal to the working stiffs. I don't know if they're doing so as well as they once upon a time did. Scott Walker, in some way, shape, or form, really undermined the union effort in the state of Wisconsin. And I realize there are white-collar unions. There are unionized people that work in an office. But I'm talking about the guys that, you know, and the women that go out in the field and they get dirty. They work outside. They work out in the elements sometimes or often or every damn day. Those are the working stiffs. And, you know, I sometimes analogize that Dom and I are some sort of working stiffs. He talks about the time he worked on a farm in high school. You know what I don't beat over his head each and every time? I work construction. And I got to tell you, that's got to be damn close or worse than working on a farm. When I worked construction, I worked for my stepdad, who was the foreman of the business, foster dad, technically. And he would go out and he would run the crew. And it would be his job to get the crew out in the field. So he had this work van, nothing fancy, and it had the slider doors. And at 4:30 in the morning, the bus was leaving. And since I was on the first bus stop, effectively, I'd get up for work. I'd have to be out the door at 4:30 and have my lunch packed. You know, so I was exhausted. And we'd get in this van and we'd run from Western Dane County. We'd run this route. We'd pick up all the different guys. And I always wondered to myself, did some of these guys have DWIs? Did they need this transportation? But ultimately, You picked them up. It was like kids getting on the bus. They all had their lunchboxes, and they all looked damn tired. And we would actually often get to the job site early, and early was before the appointed time. We'd all hop out at 6 o'clock. I hated the sound of that van door opening at 6 o'clock in the morning. It was the worst because, you know, you'd kind of settled into sort of a slumber. I'm not going to say I fell back asleep in the van. I don't sleep well in vehicles, but you know, you'd at least sort of half nod off and you'd hear that damn van door 6 o'clock. Even if the sun wasn't up yet, the van door's open. That means let's work. And I don't like to work that hard. I got to tell you, I found great motivation from the guys on the construction crew I worked with on the west side of Madison as a 17-year-old. And, you know, this was not middle-aged, balding, chubby Crudy. This was young, strapping, thinking I'm going to go play college football. Summer before my senior year, going into my senior year, trying to get in shape. Oh, I was in shape. About as skinny as I've ever been, you know, muscular, but skinny. Not a lot of fluff. But they worked our asses off. And we'd start at 6 o'clock in the morning, leave for the job site at 4:30. And I'd only work till like 4 in the afternoon, but that seemed like plenty to me. I mean, that would be the workday. We'd work from like 6 a.m. to 4 in the afternoon. And I'm going to tell you one more story. Not that you want to hear about Crudy's day or summer. It was the summer of my discontent. And it was a damn hot summer. I believe summer of 1987. I think that's the story I'm telling, the summer of 1987. I think the Brewers had a hell of a run that summer. I think they started 12-0. But anywho, Crudy had the misfortune of working for his foster dad. And this was the hardest working crew I've ever seen. And I mean, I've seen some hardworking guys, but these guys, they ran from place to place. Like seemingly every movement on the job site was with purpose. They all worked damn hard and they were little guys. And my stepdad, Dennis, let's call him that was his name, but Dennis, you know, he's like 5'6", 1.54. I think it was like the most valuable wrestler of his high school wrestling team as a freshman at like 99 pounds. But think wrestler build, little strong strapping guy. And he had a brother on the same crew, Jimmy. And Jimmy was no more than about 135 pounds, maybe a little bit taller. But Jimmy, wiry little guy, nothing but sinew. And I worked on this job all summer, and I'm not great at pounding nails. And it was the worst damn job I ever had. It was hot all summer long. First day on the job, I'm bent over. I'm hammering headers, you know, just boom, boom, hammering nails all day long. Before they even used the air guns on the job site, 1987. Hammering headers. And I'm bent over at the waist. And you're wearing, you know, first time I'd ever done this in my life, I'm wearing this belt that's kind of pulling the top of my shorts down a bit. And I had taken my shirt off for the better part of the day. And, you know, I'm a Wisconsin kid. I've gotten tanned before. Maybe that wasn't the best thing on a 90-degree June day. But the worst part was I burnt that belt line. Oh, my God. Because that thing's rubbing on me then. I bubbled. It was the worst burn I had ever had. Right on the plumber's crack, if you know what I'm saying. Because I'd never had that part of my body exposed to the sun. I'd never been tanned. Not there. You know, I never did the naked sunbathing. So anyways, first day of the job, not only am I beat up, kid that didn't know what he's doing, but I've got sunburn, terrible sunburn, right where that bag is going to rub me all summer long. Or at least it seemed like it. It was a miserable summer. And those guys worked so damn hard. And towards the end of the summer, and it was me and, you know, we were the young summer hires. So we got some of the grunt work. We were doing the heavy lifting. And we were lifting plywood, and I'm pushing it up. And I do have a point. I'll tell you why I'm going here. Bruce Murphy at the Online Daily UrbanMilwaukee.com says, you know, effectively, there's not a lot of representation that we see as working men and women. And I'm not going to pretend like I represent you, because I don't. Because you people that are listening on the job site right now, you work a hell of a lot harder than I ever wanted to or felt like I was capable of. And I really didn't feel like I was good at the job. Hell, I fell off a roof that summer. I mean, what the hell? You got some 17-year-old summer intern working on a roof, working on trusses, carrying 2x12s. I don't know, but I fell off that roof, you know, through the trusses, like two stories. I survived. Just skinned the insides of my arms, like the armpits. What a miserable summer. I got sunburned on the lower back. I've got my inside of my arms or have all the skin ripped off from effectively falling through the trusses, you know, with my arms above my head, because it throws your arms up in the air when you're 200 and something pounds and you fall between the trusses down two stories. So that was fun. Got back up and had to carry the rest of the 2x12s. And I was looking up at Jimmy, this smaller, I guess he'd be my foster uncle, Jimmy. And he was looking at me like, looking around, like, where in the hell did this guy go? You know, he heard the drop. He heard the planks. But he didn't know where in the hell I went because I dropped the planks and I fell between the trusses. So anyways, Jimmy looking around. But here's the difference. Here's when I knew I wasn't suited to be a working man. Towards the end of summer, being this kid from Wanakee, big strapping kid. He played football. I'm getting ready for football. We think we're strong. We're in great shape. We've been tanned working all summer in construction, pushing up this plywood, throwing it up, once pulling it up, once pushing it up. And we did that for about an hour, and, you know, just sweating our asses off. Another 90-degree August day by now, end of summer. And there was a heavy girder that had to be carried, and we're the two biggest guys, so we're carrying it. But we'd take 5 steps, 6 steps, 8 steps. We'd have to set it down. I mean, my forearms didn't have the strength to carry this thing. Now, maybe the plywood had worn me down, throwing plywood over my head for a while. Maybe that sucked some of my strength. But, you know, I'm seeing stars. I can barely lift this thing. I'm carrying it every 10 steps. And this 150-pound soaking wet guy and his 135-pound brother come walking up and say, what the hell are you boys doing? Or worse. And they grab that steel girder. And these two little guys carried it the next 100 yards. Didn't set it down. Didn't take a break. And I'm like, oh, my God. Those are what working men look like. And I don't want to be one of those because I cannot do the job. Hopefully I can do this job. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. I'll tell you why I told you that sidewinder of a story.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition. That song, that one kind of goes out to Big Ed Schultz. Remember when he did the political talk? I love me some Eddie Schultz. I thought he was much better on the political airwaves. On the mic, if you remember the mic, if you were here when there was a mic and Big Ed sort of held down the middays, I love those days. Not so much when he did the MSNBC polls and he'd get 99% support amongst his audience. Those were less helpful, Ed. I did get to interview at, actually, I believe, one of the presidential spin rooms before he died, before he had a heart attack. But Ed put himself out there as a representative of the working man right here on the radio airwaves. And I always admired that about Ed. And I don't know if you've noticed, but when the Devil's Advocates go out there and we do this job, it's not NPR. It's not scripted, polished radio. When I got here today, I wasn't quite sure what I was going to tell you. And I felt like Ed did that every single day. You know, the only work was between his ears, but Ed could certainly spin a yarn. He told great stories. He had great repertoire with his audience. And I love me some Ed, and I tried calling in a couple times. And I never got through to Ed. I never spoke to him as a consumer of his show. Well, I don't want to be like that. If you want to join, 844 967-2789. But here is where I'm going with this. Bruce Murphy, our friend over at the online daily, urbanmilwaukee.com, is the legislature biased against the working class? And as Murphy points out, just two of the 132 members come from working class backgrounds. Two. That's not a big number. Mike Sheridan. Uh-oh. What's going on here? Excellent. Excellent. See, you know, the computer can shut itself off in the middle of me starting to open it up. And if that was my saw at work, you know, I'd be down for the day. If I blew a saw, I'd have to drive out to Menards or Home Depot. I'd have to shut down the workday. You know, but now that my computer suddenly has turned off, I'm not sure what it's done to me here, but now you just got to bear with me for a second because, you know, I got backups. I got spares. I got ways of doing the show without that laptop. Won't be as fun. Be a little more taxing for yours truly, but, you know, I think I can pull it off. I may need your help, though. 844-967-2789. You got to give me a few more seconds because, you know, the Urban Milwaukee, if you don't have the subscription, I don't have it on my phone. Well, then you got to wait for their little timer to drop so you can get through to the actual article you want to read. But again, as I was saying, now sourced from my cell phone, which apparently is working, I paid the bill. Bruce Murphy, is the legislature biased against the working class? Could be. Mike Sheridan started working at the General Motors Janesville assembly plant right after high school graduation. He became active in United Auto Workers Union, and in his 30s, went back to college to get his degree. Meanwhile, he had been rising within the ranks of the union, becoming Local 95 president in 2002, and 2 years later, he ran for and won a position as a state rep. My first day in the legislature, I looked around and I thought, oh my God, how'd I get here? It's all those men in suits, and here I am, this working class guy. If Sheridan felt like an odd man out, he had reason to be. In Wisconsin and nationally, there are few state lawmakers who previously had working class jobs, according to a new study by Nicholas Carnes and Eric Hansen, political scientists at Duke and Loyola University. They found that just 116 of the nearly 7,400 state legislators in the United States came from working class backgrounds. They define legislators as working class if they currently or last worked in manual labor, the service industry, clerical, or labor union jobs. Nationally, just 1.6% of state lawmakers met that definition, compared with 50% of U.S. workers. Did you catch all that? 50% of the workers are manual laborers or service professionals or skilled tradespeople, but only 1.6% of lawmakers. And only about 2% of Democrats, and go figure, 1% of Republicans serving as state lawmakers qualified as working class. And just in case you're wondering, as Bruce Murphy points out here at his Urban Milwaukee column, Wisconsin had exactly the same percentage, just 1% of Republican legislators and 2% of Democratic legislators are amongst the working class occupations. Still, that's better than 10 states, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, Oregon, South Carolina, Texas, Tennessee, Utah, and Virginia have no working class state lawmakers, according to the study. Here's a quote. You know, maybe that's not representative. Maybe that's bad. Here's a quote. In principle, anyone can run for office, but in practice, the people who are running and serving are overwhelmingly drawn from America's professional classes. If you have an entire economic class of people that are not in the room when policy decisions are being made, it's going to tilt the kind of problems politicians pay attention to. There's more. Sheridan recalls his first speech in Wisconsin Assembly in 2005, urging an increase to the minimum wage. When I got done, Republican Dean Cofert got up and said, "We're in control of the House, and it doesn't matter what you say, we're going to do what we want? Well, you know damn well that wasn't to raise the minimum wage, not at that time at least. As Murphy points out, ultimately, Sheridan and Democrats passed an increase in the minimum wage in 2006, but there has been no state action since, and the minimum wage is still just $7.25 an hour, set by the federal government in 2009. Now, I'm going to diverge from Murphy's article here a bit, and the topic is the working stiff, and Sam, I see you, and I will get to you, but probably not until after the break, so please be patient if you will, and be like Sam, join us, 7.25 an hour. Scott Walker, when he was the governor of the state of Wisconsin, it was brought to his attention constitutionally the minimum wage in the state of Wisconsin was supposed to have been a living wage, a wage in which you could maybe afford housing and food. Scott Walker changed the language. Rather than, and he had at his sole discretion, the right to raise the minimum wage. And Scott Walker, wanker, earned his reputation because he chose instead to keep the minimum wage at $7.25 an hour. Can you imagine? I got a 17-year-old kid. He's interning for me. He wouldn't work for $7.25 an hour, but that's the only baseline. That's the only threshold the state government sets. And they can say, oh, well, you know, he can't hire people for that. Yeah, no doubt. But if you could, you would. We're going to talk about the working man. If you are a working man or woman, please consider joining us. Are you feeling represented? Who represents your interest? Be it the Congress, be it the state lawmakers, the president? Is it Joe? Is it Trump? 844-967-2789. Working people, top of the queue.
Advocates may not agree on much, but funny is funny. Working for a living, living and a working.
I'm taking what they're giving because I'm working for a living. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition, Friday Eve, working for the weekend. I know that's what Dom does, perhaps you as well. But I ask for callers, want to hear from you, 844-967-2789. If you're a working stiff like Rich, tell him you'll go to the top of the queue, 844-967-2789. Do you feel represented? And where would you seek that representation from? Sam from Madison, welcome. What do you got for us?
Hi. I don't mean to, like, change subjects on you, but I just wanted to, like, give an opinion about how it feels to be a 23-something in Madison trying to be a progressive. And it feels like somehow it became more controversial to support Joe Biden than it is to support Trump, me being someone who supports Joe Biden.
And are your friends giving you a hard time? Why do you feel that way? Is it about Gaza, yeah, or just generally politically people don't want, right, you to be politically active?
Gaza is a good microcosm because I feel like most people don't support what Israel is doing, but I was heavily irritated yesterday finding out how many people voted uninstructed because I understand where they're coming from, kind of, but I feel like they're playing with fire. And I hear arguments saying, like, well, that wasn't really hurting Joe Biden's campaign, but I think it really is. It's adding to the storm of Joe Biden hatred, and it all has weight. It all adds to not going well for Joe Biden. So, and I did not vote uninstructed, not to get too deep into that, but
nor I, Sam. Vague. Let's talk about your peers or perhaps colleagues. You working currently, Sam, going to school or both?
I'm just a working 20 something. I didn't go to college, but I do live in Madison and I am a progressive.
Nice. And if you're working and you didn't go to college, do you perceive yourself as, you know, a working stiff by the definition of this study, working in the service industries or something of the sort, Sam?
Not in like a strictly trade skill setting, but I'm definitely a working guy. I work full time all week, every week, and I make ends meet.
Well, good for you. Better than I can say some weeks, but let me ask you, Bernie Sanders, when I first found, I would say, sort of economic inspiration, it was in the platforms of Bernie Sanders. And I felt like Bernie did a really good job, Sam, of making it about the economy. And not about race, not about other issues, because he felt like we had more in common. We're all the 99%. We're all more likely to be, you know, broke if we lost our paychecks than some rich guy. Sam, where do you find yourself? I get progressive, but define what that means to you.
Yeah. Well, I am a progressive Democrat. And when I was old enough to, I was just barely old enough to vote when Joe Biden and Bernie were campaigning against each other. And my dad is much like me. He voted for Bernie because he really loved Bernie more than Biden. And I voted for Biden because I felt like I could see and I knew that Biden was the one who would get the nomination eventually. So I don't know. I wanted Bernie, but I voted for Biden kind of situation.
A lot of wisdom from a 19-year-old and perhaps some pragmatism. How about the kids today, though? I mean, as a 23-year-old, are your friends as politically active? Obviously, you're listening to a talk radio show. You pay attention, Sam. But how about your friends?
I'm definitely a bit of a loner as far as how much like local in-depth media I consume, I feel like, which I am maybe quite a bit biased saying that publicly, but I don't know anyone else my age who tunes into anything more than WPR or WORT, and they're not always strictly political stations.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of people my age seem like a new generation of single issue voters on the progressive side that are willing to torch Joe Biden over the whole Israel Gaza issue.
I've got a daughter who's living out in California, and she's had some professional success, and she does like hair coloration, which ain't cheap. And the young people that can afford her services tend to be, you know, a little more upscale, a little more professional, have higher paying jobs and care what their hair looks like so much that they'd spend hundreds to get it colored a different color. And what I would say is, her friends tell me, and she tells me, Sam, she's one of my younger people litmus tests. But she tells me there's a real angst over Gaza, and that this is something that a lot of her friends are not going to get over readily. But Sam, what do you think the alternative would be? I mean, you're paying attention. You know it's Trump. Do you think a lot of young people remember the chaos that our nation was in under Trump? Do you think they were affected by that chaos, or were they all kind of locked down in the basement just trying to get through virtual school?
I think me and my age groups were way more on message and on the same page during the pandemic and during the BLM protests. But the moment Joe Biden became the president, it was just like a switch, and it became, let's hate on the guy who's in office now.
And is it Joe, or is it just because now Joe is the establishment? Now Joe is the man because Joe got elected, and, you know, everyone's got to hate on the man, you know, like the quarterback of the football team. He's the man. Whether they win or lose, he gets all the blame or all the credit. Is it something like that, or is it specifically Joe Biden's personality, to your opinion, Sam? Or governance methods?
It's hard to say. I think the internet just did really some conservative supervillain out there did great at getting the internet to kind of flip us all over. Well, not all of us, obviously, but I'm not sure. I don't think it's anything wrong with Joe, because it's really, he's what's wrong with him, man?
I don't find anything terribly wrong with him. Let me ask you, Sam, as a talk show host, how do we attract more thoughtful, conscientious young listeners like yourself, Sam? What are we doing wrong here at the Devil's Advocates? We'd love more 23-year-olds. Is it the parties? Do we need to be partying down at the Union? What do we need to do to meet people like you, Sam?
you guys are doing everything you need to do. If I had one suggestion, it would be make more sound bites of yourselves and the other hosts and put them on Instagram and put them on TikTok. Make reels. Try and use the songs that the kids are listening to. Ask your daughter how to make a reel on Instagram.
She's been trying, Sam. She truly tries to guide me. And my 17-year-old is acting as something of a sales intern. He's done well. He's helped me with some marketing materials as well. They're all trying to guide this old. I'm not a boomer, but you wouldn't know it from my actions, Sam.
Yeah, definitely.
Brother, thank you so much for your call. I left you speechless, Sam. You didn't know how to react to that statement. 844-967-2789. The kids are all right, I think. Certainly that one is. Sam, tell all your young friends, you know, we're the super coolest radio show ever. But, you know, I have a hard time, Sam. I've told our newer producer, Rich, I said, you know, we used to get tons of social media follow, but Sam, I'll be honest with you, that was on the Facebook. And I know that's kind of what the old peoples do, but we don't even care about the Facebook like we used to. We have a TikTok account, Sam. I'm just not clear that any of the young interns are posting for us because I don't have an access point to go and access my own TikTok account. So it tells you what a priority I've made it in my life. But you do make a viable point, and I hope the Democratic Party is listening because young people like Sam are who you need to reach. And what I hope to do here with talk radio is really give you an opportunity to tell us what you're thinking and respond. I like interacting with people. I don't know if you've noticed this, but if I were in a bar right now, I'd be doing the same thing. Hey, dude, what's your name? Where are you from? Anyways, 844-967-2789. Perhaps I should start bringing around a point with this whole working man conversation. It all started with an article from Bruce Murphy over at the online daily urbanmilwaukee.com. And Bruce's headline was intriguing to me: is the legislature biased against the working class? And as he points out, there's only really a couple of working class souls working in state governance here in the state of Wisconsin. Now, back to this article. The worst legislation was right to work. The law passed in 2015, he contends. That's Robert Wirch. The law prohibits bargaining agreements between employers and unions, which require employees who are not union members to contribute the cost of union representations. It was the greatest attack on labor unions in the history of Wisconsin. Again, Democratic Senator Robert Wirch being quoted here. He's from Kenosha. And that legislation was Scott Walker. And Scott Walker, and I was right there during the reelective run, he was running against Mary Burke at that time. And he had already dropped the bomb of Act 10. That happened way back in 2011. We tried to recall the man in the summer of 2012. You know, he survived. But he had a reelective campaign in 2014. And he had continuously said, well, you know, it's not on the stove. It might be on the back burner. It's on the credenza. I mean, he went through this whole litany of furniture and it wasn't where, you know, it's not near and dear to him. The passage of right to work. And if you'll recall, Scott Walker, you know, he had many ways of misleading the electorate the other way. And Mary Burke was his opponent, was, you know, when it came to women's reproductive rights, he kind of did that soft focus ad, a little Vaseline on the lens. And, you know, he said, well, that's really between a woman and her doctor. And then after winning re-election, after beating Mary Burke, well, then he came back and he signed right to work. And of course, he went right back to work at defunding Planned Parenthoods. But the right to work legislation being referenced, this attack on the working stiff, because when Scott Walker, when he attacked the public sector unions and then he did the right to work, really he was attacking the working stiff. And as Urban Milwaukee, as Bruce Murphy would contend, there's not a lot of working stiffs there to push back, not on the legislative side. So he writes, union activists were never numerous at the Wisconsin legislature. but they're even rarer today. There are not as many union people as when I started, Wirch says, and unions have less clout today with the legislature, even within the Democratic Party, he adds. But the recent study on occupations is not just about union members of blue-collar workers, but considers a wide range of occupations that are underrepresented in state houses where college-educated professionals and business people dominate. Occupational surveys of legislators' occupations have often noted the variety of jobs. 8 years ago, the Center for Public Integrity analyzed a 2015 disclosure reports of almost 7,000 lawmakers and listed lawmakers with such current or past jobs as horror movie producer, alligator hunter, is that Joel Clayfish? Hula dancer, reindeer herder, Uber driver, and pro boxer and MMA fighting judge, all occupations they say make them better legislators. And in Wisconsin, the Legislative Reference Bureau does a report on each new class of lawmakers. Amongst current senators, three list themselves as practicing attorneys, three list themselves as realtors, and one list himself as a farmer, singular. Most others are small business owners in a variety of fields, ranging from insurance to farm supplies, and 32 members of the state assembly list themselves as full-time legislators. Well, that ain't a high-paying job, you know, but the per diem, that's great, ain't it, folks? And 36 as business owners, with 7 attorneys, 9 farmers, and a scattering of other current occupations. Nonprofit leader or director, nurse, realtor, teacher, firefighter, onion broker, and veterinarian. Who's the onion broker? Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates will honor the working men and women of the great state of Wisconsin, although they're not represented very well in the state capitol. And I wonder, and I want to hear from you, 844-967-2789. Would we be better represented if we had some working men and women in the state legislature, if we're ever going to have such a thing? This is the year. April 15th, you can go out there. You can become a candidate for the assembly, for the Senate. This is your year, folks. You working stiffs. Talking to you.
Devil's Advocates may not agree on much, but funny is funny.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Thursday edition. Everybody working for the weekend up around here. Dom will be joining soon, you know, fashionably late as is the custom. 4 o'clock he joins. We'll also be joined at that time by a working OBGYN, and a newly announced congressional candidate. She's seeking to replace Mike Gallagher up in the Green Bay area. She's our friend, Dr. Kristen Lyerly. She'll join us at 4:05. I am very excited. This is a unique candidacy. I mean, women's reproductive rights and her current occupation in OBGYN, I think it's going to be a great contrast to, let's just say, an anti-abortion, God-loving, vaccine-hating, MAGA-supportive Andre Schock. And that's who I think might win the Republican primary. Roger Roth is another alternative. But I think it'll be Jock. He's got the higher profile. He is a state senator. And I can't wait until the general election. If it's Andre Schock against Kristen Lyerly, I'd like our chances, folks. That could be a Democratic pickup in the Green Bay area. You know, stick around for her. She will need your help. If you are capable of giving financial support, volunteering your time, if you're in the Green Bay area, consider supporting her. And even if you're not in the Green Bay area, consider putting some money in her campaign. So stick around for Dr. Kristen Lyerly. Winning Wisconsin, very important to me. And I got a working journalist friend, John Nichols. He's got the plan. So I'd like to lay it out for you. Here's how Biden wins Wisconsin, according to my pal, John Nichols. Joe Biden will win the Wisconsin primary on Tuesday. He did so. Check. And the profits, the prospects are good that he will win Wisconsin in November in a rematch with Donald Trump. But to do that, he must continue on the path he began charting on March 7th with his State of the Union address. I love that speech. That Biden speech before a joint session was a success is undebatable. The reviews were good on the night of the speech and afterwards, even from political players and pundits who had expressed concerns about the 81-year-old Biden's ability to prevail in a hard-fought national campaign and then serve another 4 years in what is often described as the toughest job in the world. I would say construction worker, but, you know, I've never been president. Biden went on the offensive, contrasting his steady leadership with the chaos that invariably surrounds Trump, highlighting the strong economy, focusing in on the fight to defend reproductive rights. That is a big one, as John notes, and generally laying out the themes for an energetic fall campaign. People noticed. In fact, Biden has surged in the national polls. And not just trying to segue, but got Charles Franklin, got new Marquette University Law School polling, national polling coming out in the 5 o'clock hour. So if you want to know if he's surging, you're going to have to stick around for Charles. In late January, the president was in terrible shape. The Real Clear Politics average of key polls has Trump comfortably ahead with 47.3% to Biden's 43%. By late March, after a well-received speech, ramped up campaigning by the president, and some serious political and legal setbacks for Trump, the gap has narrowed significantly. Trump is now at 46.5, Biden at 45.5. But John Nichols at the Cap Times points out, but of course, national polls are not the best measure for progress in a presidential contest, which will ultimately be decided by the votes of swing states in the Electoral College. So how are things standing in the swing states? He points out the latest Bloomberg National Morning Consult survey of seven key battleground states released March 26 found that Biden has gained considerably across the board. President Joe Biden has gained ground against Republican Donald Trump in 6 of 7 key swing states, and significantly so in at least 2 of them. The results make for the Democrats' strongest position yet in a monthly Bloomberg News Morning Consult poll, according to analysis from Bloomberg. Best poll yet for Joe Biden since they've been doing this head-to-head. The move in the president's direction comes after 5 months of mostly consistent Trump leads and follows a State of the Union address that rallied Democrats and seemed to mitigate concerns about Biden's age. Now, you know, Biden's coming to Madison on Monday. I hope to bring you coverage right here on the greatest radio show ever. I'll be there. I'll make the effort. I'll credential up. I'll show up. But anyways, back to John's piece. Biden's position improved most significantly in our backyard, in Wisconsin, also Pennsylvania and Michigan, the three Great Lakes states that backed Trump's Republican candidacy in 2016 and then switched to the Democratic column in 2020. Great Lakes blue wall states, right? The February Bloomberg Morning Consult had Trump up 46 to 42 in Wisconsin. Biden now leads 46 to 45. Obviously, the president still has work cut out for him in the Badger state, but the numbers are trending in his direction. And there's a reason for that. More than a third of voters said they had seen positive news about Biden recently, the highest level since polling began in October, according to Bloomberg. The survey suggests that the president's decision to call out Trump was a smart one, as a notable percentage of Biden voters indicated that they were backing the Democrats to prevent Trump from returning to the White House. I think I find myself mostly in that column. Fewer than 3 in 10 Trump supporters said theirs was a vote against Biden. However, nearly half of Biden voters said theirs was a vote against Trump. Bingo. In Wisconsin, where Biden leads, 6 in 10 of his supporters said their vote was a vote against Trump. So, lesson number one for Biden as regards the November race in Wisconsin is simple. Keep running against Trump. It works. Lesson two for Biden in Wisconsin to keep contrasting Biden as an advocate for working Americans who want to tax the rich with Trump, an alleged billionaire who used his first term as president to enact deep tax cuts for the wealthy. Yeah, we're for the working folks. Biden has worked to reverse the Trump tax cuts and proposes raising the corporate tax rate. He would require billionaires to pay at least 25% of their income in taxes. And the president wants to use money to preserve Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, provide tax breaks for working families, and fight poverty. That, according to John Nichols, is an exceptionally popular agenda, according to Bloomberg, which found that voters overwhelmingly support higher taxes for the billionaires, 83% of Democrats, 66% of independents, and 58% of Republicans favoring the idea. I suspect 100% of the devil's advocates, hardcore P1s. That means you folks. Those are the best kind of fans. Dom joins next. All you working stiffs, you stick around. We've got a working OBGYN. She's declaring her candidacy for the Mike Gallagher seat in Congress. He's retiring soon. She's going to have it by fall. Come back, more devil's advocates. The working man's happy hour is next.